This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting jazz musicians with ties to New Mexico. I'm Paul Ingalls.
What would you prefer to call what you do?
Pondering David House's question, is Zimbabwe in Kenya?
I haven't thought of a name yet. It's the good stuff.
Okay.
Around New Mexico, Zimbabwe and Kenya is known as an inventive bass player, composer, percussionist, and band leader. He calls himself an Air Force brat who was born in Nevada, but in Kenya grew up all over the world, including some early years in Spain.
When we lived in Spain, I was from first grade to fifth grade. I remember my parents telling me to stay away from those gypsies because we lived in Madrid. It was a gypsy culture that would go through the city and stop all the traffic. They had sheep. And they would pitch tents, and a lot of people didn't like them, and there was rumors that they would steal little children away, you know. So the first thing I did was go to the gypsy camps.
And what would happen there, man?
I would play with the other kids that were my age, and then the older people liked the idea that I was African and coming to them, and they treated me, you know, with care, you know, and love, and they would feed me. I know now, but I didn't know it then, but that was my first real exposure to music, because they had music all the time, castanets. Mm-hmm. To this day, I remember that percussion sound.
Whether it was gypsy influence or not, in Kenya was drawn to the arts, drawing at first, but then to music, and string instruments intrigued him most, cello and violin. He was too small at first to handle the full-sized bass he manages today. Years after his introduction to music in the classroom, he got a chance to play that seemed like more fun.
These cats needed somebody to just play a simple bass line, because they were trying to get to this sound like Miles Davis was doing on the corner. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted that. So I used to sit in with them because we were hanging out, you know, musicians and artists, and I found out that I could really hold down that bass line, but it was only because of my earlier training on cello and stuff.
So you brought something in by Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, Polygap.
Yes.
From a Rainbow Bridge. Yeah, see that cut is so cold-blooded because it's instrumental. There's no vocals on it, you know. And I remember the first time I heard it, you know, I mean, you know, we're waiting for the vocal, you know, the lyrics and stuff to come in. Then when the song ended, I was like, man, you know, it was like a jazz cut or something, you know. Of course, you know, Electric Ladyland, I like that. Yeah, man, but Polygap is, it was, you know, right here. So, you know, like I was talking about the projects and stuff, a lot of times when you start getting into music, it takes your time away from the negative things, because you have to, you know, when you hear Hendrix, you know, I mean, you have to really be into your axe or your instrument to get to that point. And the only way to really get to that point is you have to be with it. And you know, you can't be...
there's no separation between you and the instrument. That's what my feeling is.
That's right. You know, and it's a constant thing, and it's a labor of love, you know. And I've seen it, certain music, man. Like if a cat wants to get into that music and he starts, you know, studying and learning, and he starts, the next thing you know, he's developed into, you know, a human being. Seriously, just by, you know, trying to do some music, trying to do a Hendrix tune, it might take you, you know, through that whole period of negativity, and then you look around and you say, hey, you know, I don't need to, you know, be down in that.
Let's talk about the Heath Brothers, and you mentioned Smiling Billy.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about why that song is important to you?
I think it was the time period when it came out, what was happening in my life at that time. And you know, we had dreams and visions, you know, like a lot of information was coming in about Africa and, you know, being black. It was great being black at that time, and then that record was just, it's killer, you know, the way Percy Heath was playing with the bow in the intro. And then just the way he lays down that bass line when Stanley Kyle comes in with that Imbira. See, I started playing percussion, too, percussion instruments as well. See, that's why New Mexico is so special to me, too, because KUNM, 1980, gave me my first opportunity to present my music the way I wanted it presented. I did a solo Imbira piece, and this is a special piece. It's called Ku'um.
It's beautiful.
A couple of years later, and by now in his late 20s, Zimbabwe and Kenya's path took him to St. Louis, where, playing bass, he recorded his own composition, Madagascar, with musicians from what was known as the Black Artists Group.
So that's Madagascar from 1982.
Yes.
Who else is playing on that?
Maurice Malik King. He's no longer with us. He was a great, great influence on me. He was the first guy that told me, "Yeah, Zimbabwe, you got some nice tunes. That's, you know, you should you know, you should keep that up.
Nice.
And yeah, that's what I started doing. You know, Maurice, he influenced me to start doing my own material. He thought it was important, you know, not to get into a bag of being a mockingbird. Not a mockingbird, but just, you know, like, just playing jazz standards or just playing that music and not doing your own, trying to find your own niche. Or I'm glad he did at that time, you know. I couldn't really see it, but I see it now, what he was talking about, you know. It's important to have, you know, like, copyright and do your own material and not fall into a bag of just doing so-called traditional jazz or just playing other people's tunes out of the fake book and that.
Why?
That's not the intent or the purpose of jazz when it was born. It was not meant to be just rehashed and played over and over and over. It was meant to give people integrity. It was meant for people to learn and grow. It wasn't meant to just stagnate and just create some kind of thing for record companies to make a killing off of. When I did that composition, Madagascar, when I lived in St. Louis, it was from a series of pieces that I was trying to work on, where I had a dream of having a composition for every country in Africa.
Wow.
So Madagascar was the first one. And then I did a piece called Namibia. I've got a piece called Somalia. And, you know, but it's all about, it's not about, like, the situations in that. It's about the love that comes out from those people. And that it's not about the fight that they had to go through or the negative newspaper stuff about Somalia, you know, and the they used to call them warlords. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's ridiculous, you know. Who's the biggest warlord? And, you know, I don't want to get into that, but you know who they are. Then it's not them over in Somalia, but, you know, that negative thing. And I always try to do, I try to make a positive, you know, face on the people in Somalia.
It's more about the spirit.
Yes, it's more about the spirit. A positive face on the people in Madagascar, you know, a positive face in Namibia. A positive face, man, you know, not that, mm-hmm. You know, that negativity that's going around. In 82, when I moved to New York. When I went to New York, if I had went as or landed on the scene as a new bass player in town, I would have never got as many gigs as I got when I joined Izulu, the South African dance theater group, because 1983 to 1988, there was a large interest in South Africa and apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to gig like every weekend and even weekdays sometimes, you know, all during that period. It was, you know, quite an experience. So I played marimba, you know, bass, mbira. The mbira has really been helping me a lot in getting what I'm feeling inside, what I'm hearing in my head and what I'm feeling compositionally.
We're talking with Zimbabwe and Kenya today. How does New Mexico and maybe the Southwest influence what you do, and what sort of local influences have ended up in your music?
As far as local influences, I think I'd have to say, you know, Native Americans here, you know, have influenced my music deeply. And me being born in Nellis in Nevada, I have like some kind of attachment to the Southwest, the sun, the way the sun, the land, the color of the landscape, the clay and the desert. I think it's subconsciously I ended up here for, you know, for a reason. Some, you know, because I was born, you know, right at the next state over, not the next state over, but, you know, Arizona, Nevada, right there. And my mother used to hold me up when I was in the hospital, when I was born, to watch the mushroom clouds. They were blasting off atomic bombs in the air in Nellis Air Force Base in 1953. That's when I was born. And Mom used to hold me up so I could see the mushroom clouds in the distance that they were blasting off.
Wow. That's intense. Very intense. Some of the music that you play. Now, again, I don't want to categorize it, but it incorporates elements of some jazz.
Yes.
There's some obvious African influences.
Yes. Yes.
There's hip hop.
Yes. That's true. There's Hendrix.
There's Hendrix.
Yeah, and there's also I'm really deeply moved by the avant-garde, what they call the avant-garde. People like Albert Eiler, the Art Ensemble of Chicago, you know, the AACM movement, also the Black Artist Group in St. Louis. You know, yeah, all of that is I hate to even categorize it as jazz. You know, it's like it's powerful music or great black music. You know, ancient to the future. Like they, you know,
right.
You know, that's yeah, that's right.
I look at you and you feel like the sort of person that you're doing what you do because you have no choice.
That's true. That's true. And I get very emotional and passionate about music. And sometimes I really feel that way. And a lot of times, you know, like I wake up in the middle of the night and I have to play, you know, I have to get the bass or get, you know, whatever I can get and play it while it's there or else I'll lose it and work out what, you know, what it is and then try to go back to sleep. My day would be shot. You know what I mean? It's like, but I have to, you know.
Right.
I don't have a choice.
That's right.
I'll be going through this the rest of my days, I suppose. That's even, yeah, you know, yeah.
So why did you decide to put out, you know, we started talking about this a minute ago. Why did you decide to do a CD now? And why has it been so long?
Because the technology today, you can do things at home with computers and the technology. You can put out a CD. And with networking, there's this young cats up in Santa Fe called High Mayhem. They co-produced the CD with me and helped me get it out. And little pockets of creative activity like that is what inspired me to put out the CD. Because if it wasn't for that, you know, and the technology, I'd be at the mercy of, you know, these pirates.
So you have a little more control now.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes. In the creative sense and the financial.
That's great. So why don't we go ahead and listen to the 2005 version of Madagascar?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to do that now. Sounded like fun.
Yeah, yeah. I love the CD. I love it, man. It's,
yeah. Yeah.
All the pieces are really good. You know. Yeah, I really like it. It's avant-garde. You know.
Mm-hmm. Who is on this CD?
Chris Jonas, great saxophonist. He played with Anthony Braxton and Cecil Taylor. He's really a catalyst. When he moved into New Mexico, he opened up a lot of different. You know, he's got so much energy. Him and his wife, Molly Sturgis, and Dan Perlman. the trumpet player, you know, he's, me and him were like, we were really locked in, you know. He's not playing too much anymore. And Dave Wayne on drums, we're still playing, today.
Cool. You know, one thing I noticed while we were listening to that is that you were conducting.
Yes.
And so that you were conducting the band again.
Yes. Yes. Listening.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to it. Yeah. That's because, yeah.
So when you were in the studio, is that what you were doing as well, or were you?
That's a live recording. But yeah, I do hand signals, and everybody's got to pay attention. Everybody's got to be, it's all about precision and discipline. It's like a lot of people think that avant-garde or free music is just, these cats are just playing off the top of their head. I don't play that. You know, you have to play, if I'm doing some compositions of mine.
You really got to listen.
Everyone, yeah, it's precision and discipline. You know, don't be playing, sounding like you're out of breath, like, you know, like you haven't picked up your horn since the last time I saw you. You know, people have to practice at home, you know, and work on their art and work on it, you know, so the next time I see them, I don't have to carry the whole load and feeling like it's work. See, the CD sounds so good because these cats are playing their ass off, you know. I mean, they're playing good where I don't even have to, I can just lay out. That's what I like. I like to lay out. I'm working on a CD now where I'm playing more Mbita. It's a different kind of music, but...
Are you inspired by this control thing, being able to have control here?
Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
That's
doing, very good. Doing what I feel is that can penetrate and what I feel that can bring about some kind of change. I think, you know, that music is, you know, one thing, and then, I got a lot of different projects, I guess you'll call it.
Zimbabwe and Kenya, interviewed by David House. After many years in New Mexico and Kenya is now living in Tucson, Arizona. To hear much more from our interview session with him, visit our website, newmexicojazz.org. That's newmexicojazz.org for more profiles of jazz musicians with New Mexico ties. Our engineer is Nola Daves Moses with help from Carol Boss. Web design and photography by Genevieve Russell. Support for the series comes from the New Mexico Humanities Council, the City of Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund, KUNM, and Good Radio Shows Incorporated. I'm Paul Ingalls.